Hey everybody, welcome to Workforce Gaming. I am Brad, here with Doug.
Hey.
We finally get to talk about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I am very excited. Just to put where we are out there, I have finished the game. It took me about 47 hours all the way through.
Yep.
Doug is, I would say, at about the 3/4 of the way, 80% way, and you have put in, I think, 55 hours.
Yeah. So we play this the two ways you can play this game.
One of which is, I did a 3 or 4 side things here or there. Oh, I like that mini game. I'll do that twice. And versus Doug's, I like mini games and other such
things. I went in hard on mini games for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So kind of two perspectives here. Again, Doug's not all the way through, so we'll do a whole spoiler thing on the whole game later on. But for today, we're just going to talk about it. Yeah. No spoilers. There will obviously be spoilers for Remake. And I think
there has to be. Yeah.
And probably some light spoilers just in general of Final Fantasy VII, the original project. Just because I feel like you kind of got to... This is the middle chunk of that game. So if you haven't played that game, you're going to get spoiled for all that stuff. But in terms of Rebirth, we'll keep it to the first chunk of time for the most part. And again, Doug hasn't finished it, so I'm not going to spoil it for him anyway.
Yeah, please don't.
This game picks up like immediately after Remake, like within like hours, maybe. I don't know. But pretty much immediately. And our party is on the run. And this is what I was excited for in this game, is it's just open, go. You're in the world of Final Fantasy VII now. That was my big issue with Remake, is that it just felt so contained, where it was just like, it's just a city. You're in the same damn city for 30 hours. Enjoy. My biggest complaints in Remake, this solved all of them. Everything I had an issue with in Remake, this fixed.
It's really funny. It took me a long time to get on board with Rebirth, because Remake is actually like one of my favorite games, period, for a lot of the reasons that people don't like. Like, I like that it was linear. I like that it was only in Midgar, because I thought Midgar was just a cool place to be in. But people who are fans of Final Fantasy are like, well, that's not
like Final Fantasy,
a small bit of, that's not really Final Fantasy VII. It's like a small bit. So it was funny, being a huge fan of Remake, it took me a long time to kind of get on board with like Rebirth, just like attitude and what was going on. I've played Final Fantasy VII first, just coincidentally, through the part that Rebirth discusses. But it was really interesting, because they change a lot.
Yeah.
It feels like, it doesn't feel like Remake 2. It feels like just kind of, kind of like Remake 2, but it's like, it's just such a different tone. Like, it's wide open. It just plays a lot different. The combat system is way different than the first game.
Substantially better.
So, yeah, so I learned to love this game, but I will say, as like a huge fan of Remake, coming that first like first few hours was really jarring.
It is.
It was actually pretty jarring.
But I think that's the thing that I like about it, is because this is Final Fantasy to me. As a huge Final Fantasy fan, this is the type of thing that is Final Fantasy. It's going to towns. It's going to see different places. It's exploring an environment. It's meeting characters. It's talking to characters. It's all of those things. Whereas Remake felt so just like, to boil it down, like military shooter-esque, we are the good terrorist group and they are the bad guys, Call of Duty Final Fantasy VII. Whereas this...
That's a little reductive, but okay.
Generally speaking. Let's
keep going.
Whereas sure. You really got into that adventure. It felt like an adventure. Yeah. We're world traveling. We're on chocobos. We're on boats.
Yeah.
We're doing all kinds of other stuff to get around this world. And I really, really loved that scale that this had. It felt so much bigger. It just... And tonally, like you said, it's a completely different tone. Remake, I feel like, very rarely got out of the serious business tone. And
It had like lighter moments, and this is just full-blown
goofy.
But it's really similar. But actually, having played Final Fantasy VII kind of recently-ish, Final Fantasy VII is very silly.
Yeah.
Everything that came after Final Fantasy VII is like almost anti-silly, like Advent Children and Dirge of Cerberus and stuff.
Yes.
They're like just very serious and whatever, and this one's like, and Remake was kind of going a little bit, but this is just like, this is just a comedy. This is just like a comedy first, I think.
And
it's a comedy game with like I kept going back and forth. It reminded me so much of Kingdom Hearts. Positive. positive.
you can feel them more all over this thing, let's be honest. Like, regardless of where you are in this game, every couple hours, like, oh yeah, yep, there's some, this is getting close to some Kingdom Hearts bullshit.
It is very tonally similar to Kingdom Hearts, where Kingdom Hearts is silly most of the time until it gets serious, and then it just, it has this nice kind of like hard tonal swap to it. But I really loved how silly it was. I think that was not really an issue I had with it. I loved how silly this game was because and I think I put this on Remake as well. Remake is like one of the first modern AAA games where I think they did set pieces that weren't boss battles. Yeah. They were just like really neat events.
Yep.
They could be something extremely silly and cool. And this game just kind of like took that attitude and ran with it. Like all those really fun, goofy parts of Remake. It's like, what if we just made the game that was that? Like, why not just do that for most of the game? So it's really, really cool. I really love seeing set pieces and stuff that were really silly. I remember like listening a little bit to podcasts and stuff before this game came out, I was like, oh, the writing's really good. The writing is really, really good. Really like good. the characters are really are awesome. So kind of we're talking a little bit how we're playing this different. I just really like this world. I think in Remake, I was really curious to see where the story was going. And in Rebirth, this is gonna sound like a negative. I just didn't give a shit about the main plot. I just really liked the world. Yes. So I was just so excited to see what these characters were doing in all these silly situations and all of that. But I'm actually curious as a Final Fantasy fan, because the main plot in this, I mean, I'm like 50 hours in this.
Yeah,
I can at least speak for the first 50 hours of the game. It is not a lot.
So
it's fine.
So let's talk about that really quick for a second, because I think I want to go back to, you literally said the phrase, the main story is boring as shit or what I'm... You said it.
I just didn't care. I didn't care. I think that was fine, though. But so, yeah, I just didn't care.
It is fine. I think the main story is the weakest part of this game. I think that has partially to do with the point in the Final Fantasy VII story that we are, because it is very much, you know, you had the intro. The intro, we were introducing our characters. We're learning about the world. We got, okay, we did that in Remake. This is kind of that generic MacGuffin story of like, go get Sephiroth, we'll have fun adventures on the way. But really, from the beginning, it's we got out of Midgar, Sephiroth's doing some stuff, and really that is your driving force through the game. I mean, there's some ups and downs here, but basically it is just, well, Sephiroth went north, let's go north. Sephiroth, do we see Sephiroth here? Let's see here. And there's these guys in the black coats who you see in the first game, and it's basically just, I don't know, they're walking to the Golden Saucer. Must be something to the Golden Saucer.
Yeah, it nicely facilitates going to do goofy stuff, because you're basically just following these guys who they think are going to lead them to Sephiroth. And then there's some good funny plot points with just those guys in general. but it's, I think the biggest issue I had with it. So this is a game that I think has the opposite problem of a lot of open world games, where like the main storyline is so driving. It's like, why are we doing any side stuff? But the thing I liked about this, because that it's more of a plotting mainline story, to me, it felt like this gives you permission to go do the side stuff, and it all feels canonical of like just doing goofy side stuff and all that, which is what I really appreciated it. And so when I'm saying I didn't quite care about the main line, to me, it was more of a game that was giving permission to go do side stuff. I will say though, the tracking Sephiroth stuff is road trip movies, and like Final Fantasy 15 was also this. The thing that always works about those things is there's a static destination far away.
Yeah.
And the problem with this game is that their static far away thing is Sephiroth, but Sephiroth keeps moving around and they run into Sephiroth like multiple times. I'm like, so if he met Sephiroth here, why is this not the end? Okay, I guess we're not meeting Sephiroth. He just kind of like shows up. That he shows up in Remake too. Like Sephiroth showing up in this Remake trilogy is just what something he does. So it doesn't really feel like a road trip thing with like a destination. If the destination keeps like showing up and be like, ha ha, and then disappears. It's like, so, I mean, what's the difference when we go meet Sephiroth here versus when we ran into him 5 seconds ago over here? And I was like, all right, that's why I was just kind of like, I guess I'll just meet Sephiroth when the plot wants me to meet Sephiroth.
Yeah. And again, if you know the general story of Final Fantasy VII, like meeting Sephiroth is on this like world ending mission. Like Sephiroth is going to end the world. But the way it's portrayed in this, like you said, is just very much that, like, hey, yeah, well, we'll catch up to him when we catch up to him. Like, you look around, like, yeah, it's all still here, so he couldn't have done anything too bad yet. Like, there's like moments where it's just like,
yeah, there's no timer counting down or anything. You just don't know what what's he up to.
And you mentioned comparing to other open world games, just to compare it to, I think, what's going to end up for me being the fight in my brain of what's the best game of 2024, comparing it to Infinite Wealth, like a Dragon of
Wealth.
Yeah,
it was actually really interesting. Yeah.
This game, I feel like, and it's just the way that I play open world games. I can't be bothered with the side stuff until I'm done. Like I'm currently in the middle of, I've been back for like 3 or 4 hours just doing all the fun side stuff. But
Yeah.
This, I feel like you definitely could have that permission where it doesn't feel awkward, because that's always my issue. Yeah. Where in Infinite Wealth, it's like, oh my God, they just murdered all these guys and they're hunting us down. You want to go for a Segway ride? And like, razor. And it's sure. Like, yeah. The main plot is so intense and so focused on like these huge events that doing the side stuff feels like weird. Where you're like, okay, this is just like,
yeah,
you just shot this dude. You're hunting me down. Like, everybody knows I'm in this place and they want to kill me. But I'm going to do fun stuff. Where this is just like,
yeah,
we're just trying to find Sephiroth. Some people know who we are. Some people don't know who we are. We're just kind of wandering through the world. And it's just, it is a very cool tone. I think it very much encapsulates that 15 road movie feel where it's just like, we're just trying to get from A to B. It's very similar in feeling to that. This does it substantially better than 15.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is just the character diversity in this is so good.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Because you've got Cloud and Barrett, who are kind of your gruff guys.
Yeah.
Aerith, who's just like light and bubbly. Red 13 is a very interesting character in this, who has some
really good
character progression.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen for a while into the game, but Yuffie obviously shows up, and is just this like perfect fit into this party of dead serious people of who are all like, oh no, the world's ending. She's like, nah, it's funny, like, let's go do this, like, this is goofy, like, yeah. We're gonna go do this to stop the end of the world, but could I get some new materia there, like,
Terry, yeah. It's like her whole goal is like, it is really funny how her goal keeps coming back to just getting materia. She's a really fun character. Absolutely. I get what you mean though, with like the different diversity, especially, and we want to talk about the later characters as well, but it's just like really interesting when they bring a new character into the party. It's like, it's, I always say this problem with JRPGs, whenever they bring in a new character, I'm like, who is this guy? No, he's not really far. And then like by the end, they're like one of your favorite characters. Yep. Like not like, like, especially like Kate Sith stuff, I thought was really cool.
Yeah. He's done very well. He's introduced well. Yeah. He has some great moments, throughout the game after he's introduced. So yeah, just, It all comes back to that journey feeling, that adventure feeling. And I think that's when Final Fantasy is at its best, is when it feels like there's this big journey that you're on. We're going through this adventure. We're going across this world. We're not just sitting here in Midgar, which, again, I loved Remake. Remake's great. But I think this is what steps it above it in my mind.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I do want to talk about is kind of with like the world is, especially the side stuff, because I got super into that. I knew that I was really liking the side quest when I had gotten a reward at the end of the side quest. And I didn't even read what it was because I enjoyed doing that side quest and getting the end of that side quest so well. And like seeing that, like whatever story vignette, that I didn't even care what the reward was. I was like, and then I didn't, the remake side quests were not good. And in this one, it's like really interesting. They feel like very purposeful. They feel like, and I won't speak for Infinite Wealth and the kind of the newer Yakuza games, but in the older Yakuza games, the only good thing of the side missions was the writing. And they always ended with like, it was just like the writing was really good. And that's basically all you would say about the side quests. Like that, the writing was great in that one. I don't know about the rest of it. But like it feels like every side quest has a really satisfying story conclusion, which I thought was really interesting. You always get to see some sort of unique aspect of the world or some unique character in it. And the amount of mini games, it's really funny because people, I think, I'm not sure actually what your opinion on is. I think you kind of were okay with the mini games. Like, I actually love mini games. Like, I am like super pro mini games because I always think, I think anything that breaks up the standard loop of the game to me is a positive. Yep. If this was just the combat game, I would have been out of my mind. Even playing a bad quote unquote mini game to me is fun because it's just not. It's like it's saving the combat for like another period. So like every mini game in this, and it's really funny because they do very wildly in like quality and like what you're doing and stuff. But I was surprised, especially for a JRPG, when you think like JRPG mini games, they're not as active as these are.
Well,
they're usually like something more cerebral or like you're moving pieces on a board. This is just like cuckoo bananas for the bunch of stuff.
To be fair, the general feeling of this is much less traditional JRPG in terms of combat and speed and everything else. So, if you threw those in there and all of a sudden every single minigame is just Queen's Blood, it's like, okay, like let's move on here. This is Queen's Blood.
Yeah, like Queen's Blood is a Final Fantasy one, not frog jumping.
Yeah.
I don't know if you get to that one yet.
Yeah, but again, and I think that's the thing with the minigames is it's just, it breaks it up. It feels fresh. And I think especially in a game where you've got, you know, I would say, like I said, I think I'm at like 46 hours, probably 40 mm-hmm. 2 to 44 to finish it. Like, in a 45-hour game, you need something to break this thing up. And I think they did a really good job with that. There are some really good ones that I really enjoyed. I don't want to talk about what they are just because a couple of them are later game ones. But
It feels like spoilers
talking about this, even to just talk about like what a mini game was. But they're fun. They're goofy. They're fun. They fit the tone perfectly. I think that's the thing that is important, is that often I think a mini game where it's like super serious. Okay, let's do this goofy thing. Because of the general tone of this game, they don't feel out of place. It's like, of course I'm going to jump into a chocobo race. Like, of course that's what I'm going to do. Like, that fits. I do think my one issue with the minigame is there are two gigantic minigame chunks.
Yeah.
Oh, and they put them back to back.
Oh, you're saying, yes. This might be a way how you play it. So if you mainline the story, yes, that is absolutely true. There's two big chapters that are like straight minigames. I didn't have that issue at all because between those chapters, I was doing a lot of exploration. Okay. So the gap between those two chapters was actually more like 2 hours. So when it went back to like doing more mini games, like, hell yeah, more mini games. I haven't done a mini game in the last 2 hours because I've been doing exploring. So it is funny. I think people who focus too much on trying to 100% the game are going to have not a miserable time, but you're not going to have a super satisfying time. And I think sometimes when you mainline the game, the game's not super designed to be mainlined. It is kind of expecting you to spend a few hours in each section. But it's up to you.
And I don't think I mainlined it by any means. Like, I definitely did, like, you know, I would say every single area I at least had 25% full. Yeah. Now, again, you do that mostly just by getting the towers and finding a couple other things. But I would say it was about 25% at least. A couple of them I was pushing over 50. But I do think that you can mainline it and it still feels good. I don't think my experience was deteriorated because of that. I think it was just one of those where it was just in my mind, you put the two mini game, very tonally, very, just very fun, goofy parts right next to each other. And again,
right next to each other. That is true.
And again, I mean, this is a game from 30 years ago that we're basing this off of. So some of that was just, that's what we had to go off of. It doesn't make sense to all of a sudden redesign the world and go, well, we're going to make these two areas our goofy fun points. And we're going to really exaggerate those and go, well, that doesn't work. So what if we just take this and plop, you're not going to get away with that. So it's the way you had to do it. But it's just one of those where I felt almost bogged down by the second one. It's like, I'm loving these mini games, but just, I need to get back to this story. I need to get something pushing forward, because if I do one more like camera hunting for pictures or whatever, like I'm gonna lose, and I'm done.
That's funny. And to me personally, like, I never felt that way with any mini game. There's some really big ones too, like Queen's Blood. We're not gonna talk too much about Queen's Blood, but it's the best Final Fantasy card game in any Final Fantasy game, period. Anyway.
Doug, I know, is heavily invested in Queen's Blood, and I played legitimately three matches, I think, from start to finish of this game.
Yeah, and I think I've like done like 30 at this point. I think I'm like getting close to the end of the Queen's Blood storyline. I'm very excited. And then there's a few other ones near the end, but like, it's really interesting kind of diving. It's, the game feels really rewarding no matter what you're investing in. If you want to get good at a mini game, that feels rewarding. If you want to invest in the characters, that feels really rewarding. Just like, there are, it sometimes I feel with a lot of games, it feels like really daunting that it has a ton of mechanics, because this game has a lot of mechanics, but it feels like if you're interested in any one of them, you're going to get some sort of reward out of it. There's something called the proto relic missions that I really, really, really enjoyed, which honestly, like, hey, if you're listening to this, you're not sure, do the proto relic missions. They're all super cool. But each of those were associated with like a pretty in-depth mini game and like actually spending the time to learn it. There's the interesting thing with the mini game cadence is you do everything four times. Like in traditional games, you do like one, two, three, but I've noticed a lot of these mini games do four, where it's like, okay, one's your training, two's a little bit harder, three is pretty hard, but four is like, you got to know your shit on this mini game. So it was really fun to me. There's like, I thought there was something very fun and funny about getting really good at a really stupid mini game. So I really loved and really dove into that stuff, and it just kind of goes back tonally with all the stuff. And kind of on that note, like the silly tone, it feels like this game is getting away with murder, like on a lot of stuff. Like, this just feels like, and by that I mean, it is doing so many goofy, silly things that I just don't think any other IP would ever be allowed to do. It feels so out there, so crazy. And the thing that's really fun, that's really interesting, is when it's doing all these really crazy, awesome things, it still has these nice grounded characters who are doing it. So it's really, it feels really similar to Yakuza.
Yeah.
Where the Yakuza characters can get into goofball situations, still be those characters in the same way this one. This one feels like a lessons learned from like 20 other games. Like you can feel a Final Fantasy 15 talking stuff in it. You feel the Yakuza is basically all over this one. Mostly Yakuza over and over and over again. And then like taking the best parts of Remake and like, hey, how about we just do the best parts? And like all the side missions in Remake are not good. In this one, every single one is great. Like they're all Yakuza tier.
Yeah.
Like it's not this Final Fantasy is now Yakuza tier, which sounds backwards, but like that's kind of what it feels
in
like.
Maybe
you could speak more of
that. In that area, I think definitely. And again, I think what you said about this game being able to get away with a lot of stuff is true. Because I think we both love this game. I think hands down, no questions asked. But this game definitely has some weak points. And in my mind, it's like I don't care. Like.
Yeah,
I don't care. I had so much fun playing this thing. The main story, it's a go get the thing. That's the main story for 90% of it. But that main story has some of the most intense moments in it. There are a couple scenes where it's just like, this is crazy. What on earth is going on in terms of just stakes and everything else? And then you have like this goofy thing go with it. There's one mission I'm thinking in particular where it's like, you do goofy thing, goofy thing, goofy thing, goofy thing. Holy shit, is this a serious ass cutscene right here? Like shit is going down, and I just spent the last 20 minutes doing this goofy, stupid thing to get here. And like as soon as dumb, stupid minigame is done, it's like, okay, shit's going down right now. No questions asked. So I just, it's so cool the way this game works. And again, there's some other pieces that there are a couple areas that I thought were a little bit hard to navigate. In terms of just walking around, and I don't want to name. Oh, I don't want to name.
We even talk about the chocobos.
Yeah, the chocobos are great.
So every area has
a unique chocobo to it. So each chocobo has like a unique skill. So you get your first one, you just get your generic chocobos running around. You get. I don't want to spoil like end game ones, but I think this
one
the
that
second
climbs,
one is the climbs
that's
one, right?
Like climb
that
one
can scale a vertical wall. So you get all these kind of cool things with chocobos, and it's just. Again, like some of the worlds, you're like, oh, this world's kind of weird to get around. It's kind of funky. But look at this cool chocobo I'm riding. And this chocobo can kind of navigate it a little bit better than I can on foot. And it's just. Yeah.
But sometimes those things, two mesh things, mesh into a beautiful, beautiful suit of like really cool designed world with awesome way to get around it on a chocobo.
Yes.
But then there's also parts where it just doesn't
click. Yeah. It's by no means a perfect game. It's a game I love, but I definitely there's some detractions there. We didn't talk much about combat, but it is fantastic.
It's like one of the best battle systems ever made, like period.
It's the perfect mesh of action game and strategy because I think you're constantly thinking through. You've got a lot of meters to deal with. There's lots of buffs, debuffs. There's just it's everything's there, but you're just mashing that square button and that dodge button and that block button. But you're thinking so much behind the scenes in terms of what's going on. It's just so well done. I loved every battle. The battles were a little sparse in the open world. I did think that was odd. It was hard to find monsters in the open world. But
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But if you get into like the side stuff, you run into them pretty quick.
Yeah, and I was playing on hard or
dynamic.
We're not gonna talk about the difficulties. They're dynamic,
which is basically just level scaling, right?
Yeah, it's level scaling. So like you're just not over leveled, I think is kind of how it worked.
Yep.
Like all the battles, I will say the one of the things that like in the initial hours, that battle system was so overwhelming compared to the first game. The first game is like, okay, I do attack ability.
Yep.
Attack. As it's just like freaking, you got three Devil May Cry characters all interacting at the same time. They're controlling and trying to do perfect parries and dodging and swapping. And then they've got all their abilities. One of the big things that like it really took me a while to learn is that in the original game, you didn't take as much damage. So, or like it was like much easier to control the damage you were taking. Yep. But in this one, you've got three Devil May Cry characters getting hit the entire time, all of the time.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, okay, children, let's figure out what we're doing. And the one thing I am so glad they kept it because I was so worried about it is that you control every single ability and spell that comes off your characters. Yes. One of the things that drives me crazy about a lot of modern JRPGs and why I don't like them is because the other characters are firing off their abilities, kind of like, but the AI. So it kind of, you just kind of feel like a third guy and there's like two other people there. But in this one, you just feel like a freaking mastermind as you're sitting there. Okay, they do that ability. They do this ability. Or maybe I set a materia so they only use that ability. And it's just like, it's like you're doing, it's like this perfect mesh of like, I like kind of like the Gambit-y system from Final Fantasy XII because you can set people to do auto things. It just feels like it just it feels you feel smart doing it, and like it is interesting though because I think with the battle system, I don't think you can really lose any battle because you'll always have enough high potions and mega potions to get out of it if you really need to. Well,
so again,
well,
if
okay,
we
except for some of the last stuff,
if we want to talk Yakuza, you definitely can learn a lesson from Yakuza of just buy all the health items and you can get through everything. That is very much a Yakuza thing for the last 20 years. I will say though that in doing that, the game definitely leads you to certain parties. Like there are some boss battles where it's like you'll get in and you'll just get wrecked and you're like, oh, okay, I should have had Barret because I really needed somebody who could shoot something in the air. Okay. Well, this is going to be a tough one. Like, I definitely should have had Aerith here because I've got a little bit more magic healing things going on with there. So it definitely leads you to certain parties. The other thing with that is I love that this game broke up the parties a lot.
Yes.
So you have to be good with everybody.
Oh, my God, it's so good every time. Yeah, it's really cool because they'll do, like, weird matchups and stuff, like, both personality-wise and with the characters. I will say, though, this game... this sounds really stupid and going to get really off topic for a second. So a lot of people grew up on Dragon Ball Z. I secretly grew up on Sailor Moon and Cardcaptors. So like the more like girl power, just because it was just what was on TV. This game does girl power like freaking amazing. When you've got like your three girls going like out of team, like for some reason, just like the silliness and the goofiness of the game just like really sings with those like three characters. So it's really cool. Like I just love when they're doing the mashups and stuff because it's like they're having their own little subplot kind of thing that's going on. And if they all work really well together, it's cool. If they aren't working really well together, it's cool. I'll try to be as spoiler free as possible, where this one character has to go do something by themselves and like, I need somebody to come with me. And then somebody gets like picked from the group. Like, why would you call me? Like, I'm not the guy who should be doing this with him. And it's just like, it's a cool thing because it's like, yeah, you're right. These two characters wouldn't. So all these different mashups are really cool from a story perspective. And exactly what you're saying, like, hey, you didn't use Yuffie a lot, I bet, because she's kind of complicated, but you better
learn it now.
Right now.
And I think that just, that makes the combat feel much more evolving as you go through because you have to learn all of them. You can't just go, well, and this is what I feel like a lot of us do in JRPGs, like, all right, I got my seven, but let's be real. These are the three I'm using. These are my three. The other one, maybe it was something, but it's like, no, you have to. And I thought it was interesting just because it made you think strategy different. If I have Red, Barret, and Tifa, I'm thinking different than if I had Cloud, Tifa, and Aerith. Like, I'm just, because of the nature of who's there, you have to think different based on what they can do. It's just so cool.
Yeah. And they all level up at the same rate, base, close enough. So instead of, like you said, because at JRPG, usually you pick your three characters because now they're five levels ahead of everybody or 10 levels ahead. But no, because everybody's the same level, you're always feeling free to swap between them and all that stuff. There's just so many smart things. The freaking abilities on weapons was such a cool idea, too.
That worked out perfectly. It pays off to experiment. Like, it gives you that incentive because basically you get a new weapon. If you use the thing, I don't know, somewhere between like 4 and 10 times.
Not that many times, like, surprisingly.
There were a couple where I literally feel like I used it twice and it was like, it clicked. But I feel like 4 or 5 is kind of the average. But it just,
you use the weapon special abilities a few times, so many times.
And then you master it. And it's just that perfect, like, tutorial in-game without slowing it down and going like, okay, here's what happens when Cloud learns Infinity's End. Like, you do this thing. No, just use it a few times. You use it a few times, we'll give it to you forever. Play with it. But here's, like, your brief tutorial on how to get it.
The tutorial, actually, the tutorialization in this game just throughout was like really good because there's so much shit going on. The character tutorial. Oh yeah, hey, if you haven't played this game yet, do those freaking character tutorials. I promise you. Like, I don't know why they're not required, but like,
all the
characters suddenly made a million times more sense.
Go do them. There was, I think it was Red. Like, I realized I was using his vengeance mode wrong for like the first like 3 hours, and I was like,
yeah.
Oh, okay. Here we go. After I did, I was like, oh, that all clicks. That all makes sense. That's logical. Okay, good. Yeah. Okay, good job. Good call.
And once you sort of figure out how to each use character, you're like, wow, this character's really overpowered. They all feel like overpowered characters. It's so sick. And that's only because you are understanding how to use them. And it's like so freaking rewarding.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
Head and Shoulders Above Remake. I mean, it's amazing. I don't think it's my favorite Final Fantasy. It's up there.
Oh, interesting.
No, it's definitely not my favorite. I was having a
Would have it beaten 16?
That's what I'm struggling with right now.
No, it's fine.
Being 24 hours removed from the end of it, my gut feeling is yes, it's better than 16. And if you haven't listened to our stuff on 16, I was absolutely floored and loved 16.
Yeah.
It's right there with 16. So
yeah, they're so different. Yeah, I understand. They're like,
it's totally, one of those things where it's like you can't compare them, but it is the best Final Fantasy VII property that's been made in that Final Fantasy VII universe. It is the best of the Final Fantasy VII stuff.
Yeah. And it's funny. I think even this far in, I think Remake had such a crazy punch for me that I think if I played them again, I'd say like Rebirth is the game I'd probably even like more. But I think Remake was such like a big moment for me personally, because I always want to see Final Fantasy Kingdom Hearts, and that's what that was. So I think I'll probably always prefer it. But this is like such an amazing follow-up, just like saying, like, there's a million things we can nitpick. I'm so glad we didn't talk about that. But it's just like, you just sound, if you start nitpicking this game, we could spend 4 hours nitpicking this game if we want, but there's so much fun. There's so much fun, goofy stuff. Like, you know what? All of those little issues, I'd rather they had spent the time making those awesome parts more awesome than trying to fix all this stuff.
None of the issues feel like they're hampering the entire product. There's no issue that's is bringing down my thought on it in any way, shape, or form. So I think that's, again, even, I mean, the main story is probably my least favorite part. And even that, it's like, yeah, no, I get it. It's boring. Nope, fine. Yeah. Moving on. All right. Look at all the cool stuff in the middle. All that stuff in the middle is crazy.
And all the bad stuff is kind of bad, interesting stuff. it's all interesting. There's, everything, even the bad stuff, is interesting.
That is 100% true. But great game. We will for sure have a spoiler discussion of that sometime soon. We'll probably talk for twice as long on that.
Yeah. Talk about the side quests. That's all I care about.
But we are Workforce Gaming. You can leave a comment below. Subscribe to our channel. There's a link to support us on Ko-fi below. We'll see you later.